Good morning, everybody. We are going to be doing Parshas B'Shalach. We're not going to be getting very far into the Parsha. We're only going to be looking at the first two verses. So let's begin. The Torah tells us, "Vayihi B'Shalach Paro es ha'am," and it was when Paro sent the nation. "V'lo nacham Elokim derech eretz plishtim ki karofu." God does not take us out in the straight path to the land of Israel because it's too close. "Ki amar Elokim peninachem ha'am b'rosam melchama." God was concerned that if he takes us out straight away into the land of Israel, we're going to encounter war. And what happens when a group of slaves who have only enjoyed freedom for a few days or months suddenly encounter war? They say, we'd like to go home, back to our slavery. As counterintuitive as that may be, as surprising as that may be, human nature is such that we're very accustomed to our comforts and to our routine. And that was the routine that the Jewish people were used to. Slavery, Egypt. So God said, if I take them out too quickly, if they encounter war, they're just going to turn right back around, and I'm not interested in that. So what happens? The Torah tells us the next verse, "Vayasev Elokim es ha'am derech hamidbar yamsuf," that God takes us out in a circuitous way through Yamsuf. "V'chamushim alu b'nei Yisrael mi'aretz Mitzrayim." And Chamushim, let's go with Rashi's translation, that only one-fifth of the Jewish people left from Egypt. By the way, that dovetails nicely with what I just said, because people are creatures of comfort and of routine. And when you're used to a certain setting, as treacherous as that setting may be, it's not easy to leave. So even though God had opened up the gates and we were now leaving, four-fifths of the Jewish people chose to stay behind and ultimately just got swallowed up in the Egyptian culture. There are other interpretations for what the word chamushim may allude to, may be referencing. We discussed this in the Parsha class 2 years ago. Perhaps it means that we left armed, ready for war. There are other interpretations. But one way or the other, the storyline that is told to us in the first two verses is a storyline that has much excitement embedded in it. We're leaving, the Exodus is happening. On the other hand, there is a great deal of hesitation as well, that God did not want to take us out too quickly into the land of Israel, that we were ourselves hesitant to leave, which is why only one-fifth left. So there's a tension in the first two verses, and I'd like to explore that tension over the course of the class today. The first 19th century biblical commentary that we are going to look at is the Malbim. The Malbim writes as follows in source number 2. "Hine, ma shesivev Hashem shishalchim paro mirtzono, v'lo hotzia mirishuso b'yad chazaka uvekobin melchama." Asks the Malbim the following question, although it's not presented as a question, he just writes it as a fact or as a piece of analysis, but we're going to present it as a question. Why did Paro need to be the one to give the Jewish people permission to leave? Why didn't God just say, "Hey guys, we're out of here. Bye, Paro"? The Torah clearly articulates that Paro sent the people out. And this is a point that the Nitziv is going to focus on also. "Vayihi b'shalach Paro asa'am." When Paro sent out the people, what do we need Paro's permission for? That's the Malbim's question. Why does the Torah make it clear that our exodus was contingent on Paro's agreement to the fact it's time to leave? We could have left with a strong hand. We could have left ready to wage war. "Hagam shebitchila hit olelbo v'hisrabo shishalcham kedeshima ein v'shalach bo makosav ososav leman yiskadesh shem Hashem." Let's remember that God sends Moshe to Paro in order to punish the Egyptians. And God tells Moses, "Paro's not going to listen to you, but we're going to go at it again and again and again, and I'm going to smite the Egyptians again and again." God wasn't looking for Paro to be a partner. God was very happy to punish Paro, to go against Paro's will. So, al kopanim bisof, achare shekila bo ososav umofsav, hayolo lohotziyam biyad chazaka. So at the very end, after punishing the Egyptians, God should have allowed us to go free with a strong hand. Al yidei sheyarim yad Yisrael b'melchama. We should have waged war against the Egyptians. V'kol kasef Mitzrayim yaelahem l'shalel. We should have emptied the Egyptians of all of their possessions, which we really did, based on the verses in last week's Torah portion. But the question the Malbim is asking is, why do we need Paro to give the final go-ahead? Why didn't we just simply wage war and leave against Paro's will? And because all of the plagues essentially were against Paro's will, so why didn't we continue with that theme and leave in the same manner?
The Jews weren't ready to fight.
Ah, very good, Alan. The Jews were not ready to fight. That's essentially what the Malbim says. Beautiful. Let's look what the Malbim says. His first explanation, I must admit, I don't understand at all. I find it puzzling, and if you would have asked me, I think it's not correct, but I'm not going to disagree with the Malbim. Look what the Malbim writes in source number 2, paragraph number 2. So, Yesh Bazesh Neitamim. There are two reasons why we need Paro to agree to send us out. Echad, the first one, Ba'asher Haisa Hageula Kodem Hazman. The redemption had come early. V'adayin lo kalu ha'arba meos shana. And the 400 years had yet to expire. Hayu adayin misurim tachas yad paro. We were still under the authority of paro. V'lo haya yachol lo hutziyam b'li reshuso. And we could not leave against paro's will. Because we were still under the decree that God gave to Abraham all those years ago that we would be enslaved for 400 years. So Paro was still in charge. That decree had yet to end, and we had to ask permission. So ladies and gentlemen, I ask you, why is that a troubling insight of the Malbim?
It is. It's troubling because all the other, in the past, we've always come up with reasons to accommodate. Well, it wasn't really 200, it was really 400 years from Abraham.
Good. So first of all, it was 400 years that the verses tell us about. Right, exactly. Not only that, in last week's Torah portion, the Torah tells us that the Jews were enslaved in Egypt for 430 years.
Right.
And we've had other classes where we've discussed, how do we get the extra 30? I thought God said 400. You recall one of the commentaries, I believe it's the Abraham Vanel, says, well, when God spoke to Abraham, he wasn't being so exacting. He was like approximating around 400 years. Yeah, that's literally where we've studied this before.
Right.
That's absolutely correct. The point is, not only have 400 years passed by, the Torah has told us that 430 years have passed by. So now the Malbim is saying, well, the Zman of the Geula really hasn't arrived. We're properly under Paro's jurisdiction, and therefore it wouldn't be right to leave against his will. I don't understand that. So I must be missing something. I don't know. Unless the Malbim is saying, well, we were only enslaved in Egypt for 210 years. So from that perspective, we should have continued on in our slavery. And therefore, we can only leave if Paro gives us permission. Maybe, but
then it's not talking about. He's not taking into consideration the 10 plagues. Like, why did you?
If we were still meant to be in,
and then where's the second?
Jeff, it's a good point. I don't know what to do with this Malbim. I'm not making up these words. He writes, "Ba'asher Haisa Ha'Geula Kodem Hazman." You see the Hebrew, right? The Malbim writes that the redemption happened before the time of our slavery had ended. And the 400 years had yet to expire. The only thing I could suggest, just to repeat what I said, is that if you take the 210-year count, so that is obviously substantively less than 400 years. So from that perspective, maybe we still owed Paro a debt, and we had to have Paro's permission. I don't know what else to say.
Not very convincing.
Not very convincing. But we are not on the Malbim's level, and I'm sure if he was here, he'd be able to explain what he means. So that's the first understanding.
Anybody else? Any other comment on the Malbim?
On the Malbim? I don't know. That's a good question. If there are any commentaries on the Malbim's commentary.
The first one.
Right. That's true. I don't know. That's a good question.
When you read something like that, you really can, your default position is, who am I to go against...
I say that by my interaction with my wife all the time.
Yeah. Well, the question that when you read something like that, it really is not logical.
Right.
Does it call into question your thinking about other commentary of this particular?
I don't think so. I think that if you look at the breadth and depth of the way any one of these commentaries express themselves and their ideas, and you're so taken by their brilliance, that it's not like fake humility to say, I don't understand, but there must be a reason. I'm very serious in what I say.
Well, that a vow is a vow. I mean, 400 years
right. But,
is
but it, the Torah already told us that 400 years passed. I think you have to say, like I've been saying, that from the 210-year perspective, so it was still early. I'm not sure. Okay, let's keep on going. The second understanding is reflective of what Alan suggested a few moments ago. The Malbim says in source number 2, paragraph number 3, Vahatam Hasheni, the second reason why we needed Paro's permission, Ki Ha'ezer Ha'eloki, God's help, Lo Yuchol Rak Kifi HaChana. God only helps us corresponding to how much we're ready to be helped. V'sheis Gabru Yisrael B'ma'at Am Al Amim Giborim Milumdei Melchama Ayedei Ezer Eloki. We had to be ready, at least a little bit, in order to fight against this very strong and powerful nation. And in order to fight, we had to be internally ready to pick up arms. Tzarich, the Malbim says, we needed the following items to be in place. Number one, Hahachana Hativiit. We had to have natural, physical preparation. Shehelahem lev amitz veruach gibora. We had to have a courage. We had to be ready to fight. Sheal hachana hazos tachul hashefa halokit latet lahem oz v'ta'atzumos ne'ela miderech hateva. What the Malbim just wrote is as follows: that God only helps those who help themselves. So we had to have developed a certain courage, a certain fortitude in order to pick up arms and fight the Egyptians. And God's not going to help us if we are not willing to fight. That's number one. What's the second ingredient that's necessary? Beis, just give me 1 minute, Jeff. Let me work through this. Ha'achana ayidei ha-zechus v'ha-kisharon she'yu meleim emuna u'bitachon ba'ashen she'bazeh ya'asechayel. We have to also have a great deal of trust and faith in the Almighty. Behem hayu chaserim shtei ela. The Jewish people lacked both of these ingredients. We lacked the physical fortitude, the physical courage to pick up arms and be willing to battle, number one. And more fundamentally, we lacked the faith in God. So in order to receive God's blessings, you have to do your part in this world, and you have to believe in the blessings.
Right.
And we lacked both. We lacked any physical preparation. We were wimps. We were slaves. And we were also on a spiritual level extremely weak. We didn't have, we had not developed any sense of faith and belief in the Almighty. Now you'll tell me that the Jewish people have just been wowed by these 10 miracles, these 10 plagues rather, and we've seen the hand of God. That's true, but let's just remember how deeply ingrained our slavery mentality had become. Whether or not you calculate 400 years, 200 years, it's been many, many, many years living as slaves under the strong hand of our Egyptian captors. And we did not have a reservoir of emuna and bitachon, of faith and trust in God to draw upon.
Isn't that evidence for the pasuk itself that God took the indirect route?
Right, so that's absolutely correct. That's what he's going to, that's where the Malbim is going. So the Malbim is saying that we lacked both of these ingredients. Kilibam haya malei upachad umora. Our hearts were filled with fear and awe. Kiderech avadim hamirugalim ba'avodas parach. Sherucham shafal v'nicha. Sherucham shafal v'nicha. We were basically lowly, very sheepish people. We were very lowly and sheepish people. We had no courage. V'lo nishalmu adayin be'emuna u'bitachon karoi. And we had not developed a sense of faith and trust as is necessary. V'lochei, therefore, chutzrach shi'ishalich paro es ha'am b'rtzona. That's why we had to have Paro agree. V'lo yatsu ayidei melchama. And we were not ready to pick up arms and fight and leave against Paro's will.
Doesn't that indicate to you, does that give you an inference? Where was Moshe? Should Moshe have instilled this emunah?
So he might have, but he was only one person. And as I just said, it was so... Ellen, it was so deeply entrenched in the mindset of the people that it does not happen overnight. Forget about Moshe and Aaron. Think about the 10 plagues that wowed everybody. It still didn't change the facts on the ground. A mentality is a mentality. And that only changed after many, 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 many years. So what the Malbim begins, just for a moment to review, what the Malbim begins by asking, why do we need power to send to the people? Why couldn't the people wage war? Why couldn't God allow us to leave with a mighty hand? And the answer is, God only helps those who help themselves. And we were not prepared to fight. We did not have any spiritual reserves within us. We were very, very weak. We were a very vulnerable people, both on the physical end and on the spiritual end. And as such, we had to seek Paro's permission. We had to wait until Paro said, "You may go," until we actually left. And that, as you pointed out correctly, is the reason why the Torah says that God does not take us out straight into the land of Israel. God takes us out in a circuitous fashion, exactly speaking to your point. Because if we were not able to wage war against the Egyptians, we would not be able to wage war against the Philistines either. The Malbim writes next paragraph, "Umishnei hatamim eila," from these two perspectives, "Lo nacham gam kin derech eretz plishtim." God does not take us straight into the land of the plishtim. "Hagam shehaderech hazeh karuf hu l'eretz Yisrael." Even though this is the most direct route into the land of Israel, "im l'tama echad," from the first perspective, "shekimo shelo nishalim zman haketz shel arba meo shana sheyatzu me'atzma mimitzrayim." So we know that if our 400 years did not elapse for the amount of slavery that we needed, "kein lo higia hazman sheichnisu biyad chazak al eretz Yisrael," so too, we were not allowed to go into the land of Israel and take hold of it. Very, very interesting. Remember, the Bris bin Abisarim, when God communicated with Avram, God said, "Your people will be enslaved in a land that is not their own for 400 years, and then I will bring them to Israel." Well, if the 400 years had not elapsed, so the second part of that statement, that I'll bring you into Israel, was also not coming to them quite yet. So from that perspective, we were not ready to go into the land of Israel. One second. Additionally, we were also not prepared to fight. I want to just skip a few lines over here. "V'im l'tam ha'sheni," about three lines down from the end of the source, "shekimoshel haisa lehem ha'achana lasos mechama imitzrayim," just like we were not prepared to wage war against the Egyptians, "kein lo haisa lehem ha'achana lasos mechama im plishtim." We were certainly not ready to fight against the plishtim. "Ki hayu rachei levav," we had soft hearts, "velo chazakim bebit tichunam al Hashem," we were not strong in our faith with God, "ad shera shebederech hateva yinachim ha'am berosam l'chama v'yeshavu Mitzrayim." And that's why God understood that if he takes us out of Egypt and we encounter war, we're going to go right back to where we started. I'm going to say one more thing and then I'll stop for comments. Maimonides tells us that God will do all sorts of external miracles, but it is axiomatic to the Jewish faith that God will not tamper with our internal being.
Absolutely.
That's why all of the commentaries struggle to understand, well, what happened with Paro? How come God strengthened Paro's heart? Paro is the exception that proves the rule. And if God had to go to the extreme with Paro, he was not willing to do so with the Jewish people as a whole. He wasn't going to meddle with our internal persona and our internal being. And therefore, God was very well aware of our very, very weak, vulnerable state from a spiritual perspective, from a physical perspective. That's why we had to ask Paro's permission to leave. And that's why we did not enter immediately into the land of Israel.
That's why we had to wait for the UN in 47.
Maybe. So this is a very psychologically sound Malbim. Very interesting, the commentary that he makes. Yes, Jeff.
2 points. One is that when basically God puts the Jewish people between the devil and the deep blue sea, that there's nowhere that says that they were armed, but they weren't prepared to raise up their arms against the oncoming Egyptians.
You can have a sword, it's meaningless unless you know how to use it, or are willing to use it.
Right? And so all they could really do was rely on God. So actually God is understanding that they were weak, they weren't willing, and so then the result was the miracle of
good.
The parting. And also one more point was, this is speculative, but I just want to mention, 200 years versus 400 years, and the explanations was really from Abraham.
Right.
If only 20%, let's say, of the Jewish people, the Hebrews, left Egypt, and the 80% stayed, there's nothing to say that, well, it could very well be, just think about it, that the 20% that left and 40 years later basically established a beachhead in Canaan, opened up the space. A good portion of the other 80% of people, some of whom might like to stay in Egypt, Babylon, but a lot of them at that point, it could have very easily been that the 400 years was really, you know, many more Jews, Hebrews came over during those next 200 years. I know it's speculative.
It's speculative. It's an interesting observation, but it's speculative.
They're not raising their arms and just being weak, and all they had to rely on God.
That's correct. That's exactly the case. Dr. Nemzer.
I'd like to address the question when you started from the beginning, because there was a question, why did Perah say, not just give permission, he sent.
Right.
He said, get out of here tonight.
Good.
Then
it is going to take even one step further, which we'll see.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, from what we've seen so far, there were three options, none of which of place, none of which happened. Staying in Egypt, going into the Philistine area, or going to the land of Israel itself. None of those happened. We went into the wilderness.
Right.
Egypt, even if it was not a legal slavery arrangement, it was de facto mutually accepted. The Jews had accepted our life is here.
Right.
And the Egyptians accepted your slaves, and we won't kill you, but we'll work you. And I think the sending out had to show was, on the one hand, to get the Jews out of there and to see returning is not an option. We've been sent out. We've got to go somewhere.
Right.
The Philistines were too strong at that point. We weren't ready to enter the land itself. So this new option of going to the wilderness.
Seems like a reasonable accommodation. It meets everybody's needs. Yeah. That's what happened, right? That's what happened. So look what the Netziv says in source number 3. Very interesting. And Dr. Nemzer, it speaks to your point. The Netziv in HaMikdavar writes as follows. Vayhi b'shalach paro asam. And it was when Paro sent to the people. Eino muvan ma'atala ha-mikra b'paro. Right? So Netziv, I don't understand. Why does the Torah give credit to Paro? And when was Paro sent out the people? Paro was responsible for the Exodus. V'hachim mi-ba'i, the Torah should have said, v'yihi b'tseis Yisrael mi-Mitzrayim. And it was when the Jewish people left Egypt, v'lo nacham, and God did not lead us directly to the land of Israel. Why does the Torah put the focus on Paro, when Paro gave us permission? So we saw what the Malbim did with that Paro's agreement, permission was necessary. The Netziv understands it, based on the Medrash, in a different way. Ela mikan lamdu b'mechilta. The Medrash and the Mechilta teaches us from these words, Ein shiluach ela lashon levaya. The word shalach in this context does not mean to simply send off, but it means levia, levaya. Anybody know what that word means? It means to accompany. What do we call a funeral in Hebrew?
Levaya.
A levaya. Why is it called a levaya? Because we accompany the mace to the burial ground. Even though sometimes it's two different events. Sometimes we have the levaya in the funeral home and then the burial is in the cemetery. But conceptually, we are escorting the person that has passed on, you know, to the final resting place. So the Netziv writes, in this context, Vayhi b'shalach paro, shalach doesn't simply mean to send off. It's not that Paro sat in his chair and he said, goodbye, you're free to leave. But Paro actually accompanied us, according to the Medrash. Kimo v'Avram holich imam l'shalcham. We have a pasuk also in Sefer Bereishis which teaches us that Avram also accompanied his guests on their way out. And we learn from Avram that you're supposed to accompany your guests as they leave. In fact, this past Friday night, we ate in one of the members from the shul's homes, and when we left, they actually left their home and they accompanied us a few feet. That's paralleling what Avraham did. That's the what you're supposed to do, Hachnasas Orchim. Okay, so writes the Netziv as follows in the second paragraph in source number 3. V'yesh lahavin, one has to understand, mina le'lerabu seinu dekan mashmo hachi. How did the rabbis know that the word shalach in this context means to send off? Sometimes the word shalach just means to send. But here it means like to accompany. So what triggered the rabbis to understand that in this context, Paro not only sent us off, but also accompanied us on our way out? V'lo milashon shalach ami v'yavduni. The word shalach in the context of shalach ami v'yavduni means just to send out. So how did the rabbis know over here that Paro accompanied us, as opposed, no, that happened 7 days later. This is day number one. Shehu lashon hanacha v'rushus. Sometimes the word shalach means to like let somebody go. You give them permission to leave. Ela mismichas ha'inyan. So Netziv says the answer is, well, look at the next pasuk. Vayasev Elokim es'am derech hamidbar yamsuf, that God took us out in a circuitous way. It's not just the next verse. Embedded in Pasuk Yud Zayin, embedded in verse 17, is the answer to the question. So I said the next verse, it's not simply the next verse, it's the context. The Netziv says it's the context that gave the rabbis the understanding that shalach here does not mean simply to send, to give permission to leave, but it actually means to accompany. Where is the Netziv going with this? Well, let me show you. The Netziv writes as follows, four lines from the bottom of the first sheet. Uvaha kasiv laharos bazeh, the pasuk is coming to teach us here, shelo haya ikov acher milelich derech prishtim. There was no other entity that held us back from going directly into the land of Israel, ki'im hatamim shemivur bazeh hamikra, except for the one that is listed in the pasuk. So what is the entity? What's the one reason why we didn't go directly into Israel? The one reason is because of God. God didn't think it was a good idea. But there was no other authority that was weighing in. There was only one cook in the kitchen. There weren't two. The Netziv is going to go on to say that I would have thought that maybe Paro only gave permission to let the people go into the desert. Because he assumed that if they go into the desert, they'll come back. But that's not the case. Paro not only sent us off, he accompanied us. He accompanied us to the place where he understood that we could have gone directly into Israel, and he didn't stop us. Let me again show you inside. V'lohaya ikov mitzad Paro. The Torah is trying to teach us that Paro was not holding us back. If, from Paro's perspective, if we wanted to go directly into Israel and he knew we would never come back, he would have let us go directly into Israel. Because if in Paro's mind, he wanted us, he intended for us to come back right after we had a festival for God, Paro would not have let us go through that direct way into the land of Israel. Maybe we would stay there for good. If we go into the desert, Paro thought that we would stay there. It will come even more clear if we turn the page and look at the top of the next the top of the back page. Va'isi Omer, I would have said, "Demishum hachi lo haya ikuv mitzad Paro, mishum shelo yada leize derech yelchu mesukos share haya Paro mitzrayim." In other words, Netziv is saying, had Paro stayed back in Egypt, then I wouldn't have understood so clearly that Paro was really letting us go for good. Because I would have thought that Paro was back in his palace, and had he been given the choice, he would have said, no, you must stay in the desert. You can't go into Israel, because I want you to come back. So had Paro stayed back, I would have said that Paro was really hoping that we would go into the desert because he was hoping we'd come back. Or in other words, Paro was banking on the fact that we were going to only go into the desert. And he never really gave us permission to go directly into Israel because he wanted us to come back. The Imra be'emes, and had Paro traveled with us, hayamocheba milich derech plishtim, Paro would have stopped us from going to the land of the Plishtim. Mishum hachi pirish hakasav vayihi b'shalach Paro. The Torah wants to tell us that Paro had no say whatsoever. That Paro was powerless at this point. And that's why the rabbis say vayihi b'shalach when Paro sent. What does the word shalach mean? Shalava osam atzukos. That Paro actually accompanied us till Sukkos. And he saw that we could have gone directly into Israel. And Paro still didn't stop us. The Torah wants us to know that it's not like Paro was back in Egypt and was hopeful slash only gave us permission to go into the desert. No, Paro was with us. He actually accompanied us, based on the Midrash at least. He accompanied us to our first journey. And he saw how easily we could have gone to Israel, and he didn't say anything. And the only reason we did not go was not because Paro didn't want it, was because God didn't want it. So by honing in on the word shalach and telling us that it means levia, he accompanied us, it's reinforcing the fact that there was only one cook in the kitchen, the master cook. It was only God who did not want us to go directly. But from Paro's perspective, he was like already a persona non grata. He couldn't stop us. Had we wanted to, had God want us to go directly into Israel, we absolutely could have. Mikomakom haya lahem reshus mitzado. From Paro's perspective, he already gave us permission to go into Israel. Originally, Paro sent us out for good. And the only reason we didn't go in that direct way is because God did not desire it. It had nothing to do with Paro.
Well, maybe Paro wanted us to go directly because he wanted the Pelishtim to succeed us in the war.
Right.
Paro knew that if the Jews went directly, they would have been defeated by the armies of the residents.
Well, God could have made us God could have made us victorious had he wanted to.
Yeah, but that wasn't God's plan.
Okay.
I knew we were weak.
Okay, that's true.
Also,
I doubt Paro's war. I think what Paro wanted was the Jews to go directly into Eretz Canaan and get defeated.
Interesting.
You should have stayed here.
Well, listen, the Nitzis point. Yeah, please.
You just answer that. Matter of fact, again, just mm-hmm. knee jerk reaction the way you read. Paro really wanted the Hebrews out of Egypt. He wanted to make sure they were out of Egypt, that he accompanied them to the Egyptian border to make sure they were gone, and also he was perfectly happy to send them out right into the arms of the Philistines.
But I don't accept that, because I don't really think that Paro wanted the Jews.
He was ready. If the 10 plays, he said, get the heck out of here.
So
I want to make sure
I agree with Jeff, and I think that the Nitziv's analysis dovetails beautifully with what you're saying. Vayhi bishalach Paro. Paro was so intent on us leaving that not only did he say sayonara from his chair, he actually got up on his horse, according to the Midrash, and accompanied us to our first destination outside of Egypt. And to show us how powerless Paro was, Paro would have been fine had we chosen to go directly into Israel and stay there.
Then why did he chase the Jews?
So something happened. Something happened.
What happened?
Between the initial time when Paro gave us permission to go and Paro deciding to chase after them. Well,
Paro's heart. That's what happens the next day. If you go to the next...
You're answering the question for me. That's exactly right.
But why?
So
because he wanted to show. Oh, sorry.
No, I mean, you got it right, Jeff. He wanted to
get part of your salary.
Well, listen, the bottom line is it would be an honor and a delight, Jeff, for me to share the podium with you.
More taxable.
Okay, so the bottom line is, Jeff, you're right.
From a smart person.
From God's perspective, the redemption had yet to happen in full. It was taking place, but it was not fully solidified. God wanted or needed more miracles to happen, more of a revelation of God's power over humanity. So, Kriyas Yamsev had to happen. That's exactly correct. So, right now, Paro was very sincere, according to Nitziv. He would have been fine had they gone directly to Israel. It's only God that interceded and changed the plan. Certain point, Paro himself decides, or with God's help, decides that he's going to go after the Jewish people, And he does. Just to loop in what we talked about last week, if you recall, one of the commentaries, or really a group of commentaries, understood that part of the reason that the Jewish people were told to go and collect the gold and silver from the Egyptians was that was God's way of ensuring that the Egyptians would run after us. Because had we left by ourselves, okay, so you left by yourself, you left by yourself. But now that we had all of the gold and silver with us, that was more of a impetus for the Egyptians to run after us. You'll tell me it was ridiculous. Didn't the Egyptians, well, the Egyptians were like glutton for punishment. They didn't know that God was going to get them. So, you know, the Gemara tells us, Adam Bahul Al Mamono, that a person sometimes gets overwhelmed when it comes to their money. And they do things that are counterproductive, counterintuitive, and downright silly.
No.
I don't know if you can relate to any of those ideas.
No.
But the point is, Jewish people having the resources, all of the money and the possessions of the Egyptians, that was another reason why the Egyptian people decided to run after us.
Let me ask you this question.
Yes.
Is it fair to conclude from the Midrashim that Paro, in a certain respect, was acting as the agent of God?
Absolutely. For sure.
Yeah. For sure. And that makes Paro a hero, yes.
Oh, no.
A hero? Why a hero?
He's a tool.
Well, I don't know if anybody acting as an agent of God is not a hero. Anybody who's acting as God is a hero.
Well, first of all, we believe that that as things play out on a world stage, in a way, the kings and the rulers, they are God's puppets. We've talked about this in Shul. The Pasuk in Mishlei says, Lev melech biyad Hashem, that the heart of a king is in the hand of God. So, On some level, we believe that the world leaders are all acting out God's plan. Doesn't mean it's always easy to swallow. It doesn't mean we always understand it necessarily. But there is a basic belief that Hashem's running the world. So we're really all God's puppets on some level. How that jives with the concept of Bechira Chafshis, that we can all make our own decisions. Those are all great questions. Certainly subjects worthy of multiple classes, not just one. The bottom line is that in this case, we see very clearly that God is running the show. But Paro still gives his thumbs up and at least initially lets the Jewish people go. I want to move on in the sources. We could have this conversation for many hours. It's a very, very important theological conversation, but let's just try to explore one or two other commentaries that I have for you on the sheets. They're going to both echo the sentiments of what we've already seen. Each of them, however, will add different dimensions, which is why I wanted to share with you today. So the Meshech Chachman, source number 4, also focuses on the words, V'lo nacham elokim derech eretz pishim kikarofu, that God does not take us directly into land of Israel, ki karofu. So the Meshech Chachma's point of departure are two events that are karov. What does the word karov mean? Karov means close, right? So the Meshech Chachma says, b'mechilta, in the Medrash tells us that two events are close. Karofu hadavar, she'amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Moshe, it is close, that which God says to Moses, b'hotziyacha es ha'ami Mitzrayim, tavduna selokim al ha'har hazeh. God told Moses that when the Jewish people leave, they will go and worship God on the mountain of Sinai. I mean, we know it's Sinai. At the time, Sinai was not necessarily identified. Shene'emar, derech shloshes yamim nilech b'midbar. Okay, so I skipped one line. The third line is ki karofu, karof haderech lashuv l'mitzrayim. There is a close path to return back to Egypt. So let me just explain. The Medrash says, on the words ki karofu, because it is close, that there are two matters that are close. What are the two matters that are close? Matter number one is the fact that we are going to worship God on the mountain of Sinai. Number two, what's close is that we can easily return to Egypt. That's the end of the Medrash. Ki karofu, because it's close. What's close? A, our experiences at Sinai, and B, the path to return to Egypt. What exactly is the meaning of this Medrash? Writes the Meshech Chachma as follows in source number 4, paragraph number 2. V'itachin. It is very plausible. Ki hushrash bilivavam te'uyos havodazara. That it was so ingrained in the Jewish people, the mistakes of idolatry, the havhalim umishugeihem hazarim, and these foreign ridiculous ideologies. Lachein lo pa'ala aleihem hiskalus kavod Hashem v'amisaso, asher hofia aleihem pisom l'shlosha chadashim la'akor milvavam kora. That essentially the Meshech Chachma says that all of the revelations that the Jewish people have received so far from God have really not done much good in terms of changing their deep-seated belief in idolatry and all of these foreign and ridiculous beliefs. And when a couple of people from the Jewish people, along with Erev Rav, when they made the golden calf, Lohaya echad levad chur, asher hisnaged aleihem umicha biyadan. Nobody stood up against them. Now, it doesn't mean that everyone was involved. We know that after all the dust settles with the Egel, only 3,000 people or so were killed. So it's a very small portion, but we don't see anybody really protesting the work of the Erev Rav to build the golden calf. Where were the protests? Where were the rallies? The answer is there were none, because nobody really cared too much one way or the other. They were a very weak spiritual people. Their spiritual reservoir was really not filled up. Ki od lo nechakek belibusam hod mitzias eloki yachid belti musag mashkiach al hakol umanahel kol benagaso hapratis. There was no sense that there is a God that is concerned with each individual, what they do, how they live their life. None of that had really stuck with the Jewish people. Next paragraph. Had God brought the Jewish people directly into the land of Israel, Eretz Mileya Kopesel, it's a land filled with idolatry. And we know that from even from the book of Deuteronomy. How many times does Moses warn the people? And we're talking about now people 40 years post Exodus. The land they're going to is full of idolatry. The land that they're going to is full of spiritual pitfalls. Be careful, be careful, fortify yourself. It's a refrain in almost every verse in the book of Deuteronomy. So we know that the land of Israel, from that perspective, was really quite dangerous for the Jewish people. As, right, as lo ne'akar mehem tziurim haraim umechshevas avon. We ourselves at the time, having just left Israel, we had these false ideologies, these false theologies deeply ingrained in our minds. Lachein holicham bamidbar. That's why God says, you're not ready for Israel. You have to go in the desert. Visham badad Hashem yenachenu. That's a quote from a pasuk, I think in Hazinu, that God leads us alone in the desert. V'ne'akar milivavam v'nisrachaku mikol ta'olaleihem v'havalim. In the desert, that experience, we were able to rid ourselves of these false beliefs. V'niskayim v'en imo el nechar. And we were able to fulfill the understanding that there is no other God. I'm going to grab this chumash and commandeer it for just a moment, if you don't mind. I want to show you the verse in Hazinu that the Netziv is focusing on. In the Shiras Hazinu, we say as follows. Just one moment. Okay, this is verse 12 in the book, in chapter 32. So, Sefer Devarim, Parak Lamed Beis, Pasuk Yud Beis. So, Deuteronomy 32:12. In the midst of the Shira of Hazinu, Moshe Rabbeinu says, Hashem badad yanchenu, which means Hashem alone guided them, ve'ein imo el nechar, and no other power was with them. So, the Netziv says that that verse refers to God's decision to send us into the desert for 40 years so that we would ultimately be able to believe in Imo El Nechar, that there is no other God. So the experience in the desert was necessary to rid us of our false theologies and false ideologies. She'ein Eitzel Yisrael Shum Shoresh Me'El Nechar. It's only after the desert experience that we were completely rid of any false religion. This is what the Medrash was saying. Ki karuv hu hadavar tavdunas halokim v'lachein karuv hadavar lashuv l'mitzrayim. The way I understand what the Meshech Chachma is writing, Karov Hadavar, it's very close that we're going to go worship God, and it's going to be disastrous. And therefore, it's also close that we are going to return back to Mitzrayim. Maybe the word therefore was not so precise. The way I understand the Meshech Chachma is telling us, Ki Karov Hu. What's very close, what's very likely? The disastrous Cheta Egel that's going to take place on that mountain, and how likely it is that we are going to return back to Egypt. Those events are so likely that God had no choice but to lead us out in a circuitous way so that we would not immediately run back. V'zeh ha-siba asher ikvan Hashem yisbarach nora alilos lahen ba-midbar arba'im shana. That's why God chose to stall us in the desert for 40 years. Now what's interesting is if you take a step back and just remind yourself that that wasn't the original plan. Right? The original plan is for God to take us in a roundabout way, but how long should it have taken? Should have taken it perhaps a year, but not much more than a year. We only were stalled for 40 years because of the spies. So it's interesting. The sin with the golden calf, that itself wasn't enough of a debacle to warrant keeping us in the desert for 39 more years. That was bad, but you know what? To be expected. We were a bunch of slaves. We were a hodgepodge of people. We made mistakes. It wasn't disastrous. But after we had a year in the desert, and we had the Mishkan, and we were seemingly on better grounds, and then the sin with the spies. So God realized, quote unquote, even though God knew all along, but God realized we displayed to God what he knew very well, that we were not ready to venture quickly into the land of Israel. We had to have the experience of wandering in the desert for 40 years. And it's only through that experience that we were able to rid ourselves of all of our false theologies, ideologies, religions, so on, and so forth. So that's what the Meshech Chachma says. I believe that's how he's reading the Medrash. That Karov Hadavar, what's close, Tavdunas Elokim Al Harazet, that we're going to worship God on this mountain, but he's not referring to Matan Torah. He's referring to what's going to happen with the sin at Har Hazeh, that we sin with the golden calf. And it's also so likely, Karov Hadarach Lashuv Mitzrayim, it's so likely we will turn to Mitzrayim. Both of these dimensions just reflected the need for us to spend some time in the desert before heading directly into the land of Israel. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Okay, I think we'll stop over here. Yes, Jeff.
This is just really too delicious a moment. Would you please allow me to complete the class?
How are you going to complete the class?